Any changes to agenda, Dave?
I do have one item, number four, under myself, First State Community Action Report. I'd like to delete that item. They were unable to be here today, so.
Yes, but Nick told me.
Yeah, that's it.
Make a motion, gentlemen.
Make a motion to approve agenda for Sussex County Council, April 15th, 2008, as in printed form of the deletion of number four under the Administrator's Report.
Second.
So moving to second that we approved agenda as amended. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. You have a copy of the minutes of the March 18th.
Make a motion to approve the minutes for March 18th, 2008, as in printed form.
Second.
So moving to second that we approved the minutes on March the 18th in printed form. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. Correspondence, Jim?
We have one item. It's an email from Lynn Dornberger from DTI. That's the State Department of Technology and Information. I'll just read it. It's very short. As you enter into the first full week of operation in the new EOC, I want to take this opportunity to congratulate you on a highly successful project. After all the many months of planning, coordinating, executing, and follow-up, you must have the feeling of tremendous satisfaction and pride in the end result. As I have said on several occasions, from my perspective, this project compared to another similar project I was involved with was a difference of night and day. Pleasure working with you, and I must commend Steve as project manager who did a superb job. And he's referring to Steve Hudson. That's all the correspondence.
Any other correspondence from any other council? Being none, Dave?
So the first item is a proclamation for Fair Housing Month, and I'll go ahead and read the proclamation and then introduce Mr. LaCates and Ms. Bennett. And, I know we have a number of guests here today regarding this. Proclaiming the month of April as Fair Housing Month in Sussex County, whereas April marks the 40th anniversary of the passage of the U.S. Fair Housing Law, Title 8 of the Civil Rights Act of 1968 as amended, which enunciated a national policy of fair housing without regard to race, color, creed, national origin, sex, familial status, and handicap, and encourages fair housing opportunities for all citizens. Whereas the Sussex County Council, as well as the Sussex County Association of Realtors, are committed to highlight the Fair Housing Law, Title 8, by continuing to address discrimination in our community, to support programs that will educate the public about the right to equal housing opportunities, and to plan partnership efforts with other organizations to help assure every American of their right to fair housing. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Sussex County Council that April 2008 be declared Fair Housing Month, commencing a year-long commemoration of the U.S. Fair Housing Law in Sussex County, and be it further resolved that the Sussex County Council urges all citizens to wholeheartedly recognize this celebration throughout the year.
Okay. Motion, gentlemen?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved to second that we approve the proclamation as read. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Ms. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed. Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Appreciate that. Good morning, Bill.
I kind of got nominated to come up here.
But you got the short straw? You got the short straw, right?
Yes. We have a lot of distinguished guests here today to promote fair housing for the month of April, and I would like to read them. But first, as far as the Sussex County Council, you know that during CDBG process, every application that we do, we have a fair housing resolution in there promoting fair housing, and that was about 14 of them were passed in January. First one I'd like to introduce is Juanita Flutis-Bowles, the Director of State Human Relations. If you could come on up, please.
Good morning.
And certainly they deserve all the credit for this. Ruthie Briggs King, the Sussex County Association of Realtors. Tina Joyner, board member. Bill Lux, president of Real Estate. Comedia Conley, past president. And Ms. Sandy Duncan, chair of Diversity for Human Relations. And they may have something to say on the project.
Let's see.
Okay, who's lucky one to get to? Good morning.
Good morning, you all. Thank you very much for having us down here. I want to give thanks to Bill as well as Ruth for inviting us. Delaware, as you all know, have been since 1963, if you don't know, enforcing the Delaware Fair Housing Act. And our agency is the agency actually that does enforce that Fair Housing Act in Delaware. In April, our governor did declare, April 1st, she declared Fair Housing Month for the state of Delaware. So I'm really excited to see that Sussex County Council as well as declaring your county as Fair Housing Month for the month of April. So it gives me really great pleasure knowing that you are representing your county and also supporting fair housing for the month of April. But we all know that we support fair housing all year long, and I know that you do that, and we thank you very much in the county. So I really am thankful to be here, and again, for you all to give a proclamation for your county. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Don't all jump at once.
Ruth, you don't make it. Come on, you got to make it. You can't miss an opportunity.
You
like
always make me.
She'll put her on the back burner.
I said, Bill, you know, fair housing in Sussex County, that's what you do. You don't need me to say anything. But I would just like to say and point out that two of our council members who are realtors who have been busy this year in the classroom revisiting legislative updates and fair housing because they know that's essential to what we do. In the past year, we've had several diversity initiatives which have been led by our leadership, including Bill Lux, our president, Trina Joyner, and now Sandy Duncan, who leads our diversity initiatives. We had a housing summit in the fall. We've been doing a lot because we feel that fair housing, there's a lot of foreclosure issues that go hand in hand with that. And we'll have continue to do that to make the public aware, as well as our realtors who are so involved in making home ownership a reality for many. So we're just proud to continue the recognition of fair housing, and thank you for doing the same. Is that good enough, family?
I'm proud. Thank you. You want?
No, I don't. You do it.
You're looking good too. All the stuff. On behalf, I really do appreciate it as being president of the council, everything you do for our county and the state of Delaware, and we're hopeful to do this partnership for you. Thank you very much. I don't know, I'll just shake out of it.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it. Put it on the ignition. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave?
Yep. The next item on the agenda is a county information booklet, and with us today we have Chip Guy and Heather Kemp. And they have been working on developing a county information booklet to be made available to anyone. The booklet has information regarding county services and events. It's included with county news is included, such as the opening of the EOC, recycling program, prescription drug program. County services are highlighted, such as the building permit process, there's questions and answers to zoning questions and addressing questions, how to obtain a building permit, financial assistance with tax and sewer bills, and then there are schedules and events listed for libraries and events that are held in the county. Chip and Heather Kemp, who has worked with Chip in developing this, we're very thankful for doing this, and if there is sufficient interest, we may attempt to update this publication on a six-month basis. So I'm turning it over to Chip and Heather to maybe they can explain a little more background.
Morning, Chip.
About it.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Council. As Mr. Baker
mentioned there. The idea here is to put out information for the public to pick up at their leisure. We're thinking of distributing this to the local libraries. We may also put it in some of the senior centers, wherever anyone, chambers of commerce, if they're willing to put these out. And it's just intended to be a helpful, handy guide to services that the county offers, and an overview. I don't want to say it's a comprehensive and complete list, but an overview of some of the more popular events in the county and some of the offerings of our local libraries. And we see it certainly as an extension of public outreach. And what I do here as a public information officer for the county, this is one more avenue we can take to put out information on the many things that are going on here in the county. And certainly it's been an absolute joy to have Heather here working with me on this and helping me put this together. I think this certainly is the product of two or three months of hard work on her part, so I thank her.
Absolutely. Heather, would you like to say anything? No, I don't want to put you on the spot.
I'd like to thank Mr. Baker for giving me the opportunity and Chip for giving me the opportunity to actually put this together. I had a lot of fun. It did get aggravating at times trying to get people in with all the deadlines and stuff, but I think it's a great product for us to put out.
Nice, even just somewhere down the line, it'd be nice if we could make a newsletter out of it and ship it out to everybody. Okay, you know, but
well,
I know it's an expense, but it'd be nice to.
There's certainly, you know, that's a possibility down the road. I've checked with my counterpart in Kent County, and I know that they do a mailing. They also do a larger number than what I'm looking at starting with.
Right.
They produce somewhere in the order of about 75,000 of these each quarter, and then they mail them.
Right.
And the postage alone, I think, is about $2,000 to
right.
handle all that mailing, plus the printing costs. It's quite an expensive endeavor. We're not looking to do that here
right.
at this point. We're looking to start this small
start.
And see, you know,
what kind of
reception we get from it, and then go from there.
We always start out a little slower than most everybody.
Okay.
And we work our way into it. That's cool. I really appreciate it. I happen to see it, like, of course, you showed it to me last week, and I think it's exceptional. And it's something that certainly could answer a lot of questions, maybe save us some phone calls, too, or his department.
And we're also looking at, in addition to publishing it, putting it on our website.
Absolutely.
Which is, the website is already a means for people to get information, but not everyone is computer proficient or is real comfortable with a computer. Sometimes people are very tactile and they like to have something in their hand, something they can carry with them. If you put this out on kiosks in the libraries, I think it could be very helpful, especially for that audience.
Absolutely. Well, certainly once we, I guess we'll start distributing them as soon as we get, are we gone to print? I mean, have you
printed? No, we haven't gone to print yet. I'm still
You'll
discussing
give us an
that
update, see how things are going
sure.
as soon as we get them on the street.
Sure.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Any questions on that? Well, thank you very much. It's a great book.
I hope
it works well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nate?
Chip will freely admit Heather is the expert on this program, this publishing program that was used. The next item is a request for a grant from the State of Delaware Deputy Bank Commissioner, and I have copies to hand out. Jerry Kelly, Delaware Deputy Bank Commissioner, has requested funding to help with a May 7th Deltec community meeting to educate Sussex County residents regarding foreclosures and what can be done to avoid these problems. And it's mainly to educate about prevention. What they've done is asked for funding to help with ads and notices to residents who are in foreclosure, and also to help with possibly some refreshments. They requested $5,000. They have scheduled a meeting at Deltec on May 7th at 6 to 9 p.m. And for your information, there have been 251 foreclosure filings since January 1st of 2008 in Sussex County, and 77 in just, there were 77 foreclosures just in January in Sussex County. I'd like to introduce again Bill and Brandy. Brandy has worked, especially Brandy Bennett has worked on this, especially. Would you like to make a comment, Brandy or Bill?
We're getting money worth out of you today, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. I just, as the letter mentions, I just recently joined the foreclosure task force, and I'm the only Sussex County representative on the task force, so Jerry has been working with me specifically as far as looking into how Sussex County Council can work personally with the issue of foreclosure that's growing rapidly in the county. So this the funding request is just a way that we can get involved with the prevention aspect of the foreclosure issue. If there are any questions, I'm still learning myself about it.
Get your feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
So. Brandy went to her first meeting, and Jerry kind of nominated her to coordinate the conference, the task force meeting down here in Deltec. I would like to say I contact Deltec, and they're going to allow us to use their facility for nothing, so they would be a partner in this. Sussex County would take the lead along with Banking Commission, but that's what the funding is mainly asked for, is hopefully that that the county can show that they're trying to do something, prevention of foreclosures.
Bill, are they looking for this in our next budget, or?
For right now, it's just a case-by-case basis as far as I know.
But this is, they would need it now because it's May 7th, the cost would be.
There's also going to be an event. This right now is just going to be primarily Jerry Kelly speaking on May 7th, but on June 2nd, we're going to have another event down here where several of representatives from servicers will be attending the meeting and having one-on-one discussions with
homeowners.
Yes, with the homeowners. So that'll be extremely beneficial. As far as I know, I'm not sure how he wants us, if at all, to be financially involved with that meeting. But
perhaps
right now,
our grant could cover both,
right, or at least help out,
contribute
with,
towards.
Yeah.
If we do.
Go ahead, Mr. Hoops.
Is the state say that they've have put over $150,000 in consumer education efforts? Is the state putting this money up?
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. They have been. They also have a pool of money to assist them for the emergencies and that they've been using. I know Newcastle put $100,000 towards it. They ran out of funding for it this year.
Ruthie's probably a better person
to
answer these questions.
If these are state employees that are putting this on, where's the cost come in? I mean, Deltec's furnishing the building for nothing, the room.
It's more the advertising. We're actually, the task force has just gotten access to a database provided by LexisNexis, which allows us to view the initial letters of filings for Sussex County through the Supreme Court. So we can actually obtain the names and addresses of these people and send them letters, which is also going to be part of the cost, so we can invite them to the event. Because in most cases, they don't ask for help. So we're kind of putting it out there and allowing them to know what's available.
It just amazes me how the state can find money to do all these programs, and yet they're telling the schools they've got to cut 10%, and I'm getting all kinds of calls, and I keep telling them, I have nothing to do with that. Talk to your state representative, your state senator. And people are livid because of what they're doing to the schools, and yet they can find money to do programs like this, which is good. I mean, somewhere I think they need to set their priorities. I know foreclosures are not good either, but education is not good to not be funding it as education. And I've had calls yesterday and this morning. I just don't know how they keep doing these programs. It amazes me that they can find money to do all these other things. But So I guess I'm saying I'm not really excited about this.
In a nice way.
I sense that.
Any other comments? Have you got any, Dave, have you got suggestions on, or would you like to?
We do have some funds available in county council grants.
Okay.
Which was that?
It would could you like be to put used. It, I mean, I know they need it for May the 7th, is that correct? Would you like to put it back, look at it, and make a recommendation next week to council?
Sure.
Would that be fine? Okay. All right, let's do it that way.
Okay.
And then that way, they will still give them time enough to have the money in time.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. Mm-hmm. Dave?
Oh, yeah. So.
Just got a couple other things left. It's a chip shot. Yeah. Got a chip shot here, yeah, Dan.
Sorry. The last item is County Administrator's Report. First is legislative update, House Bill 311 and 312. On April 9th, the House of Representatives Housing and Community Affairs Committee met and discussed House Bill 311 and 312. House Bill 311 would enable Sussex County Council to establish Special Development Tax District. 312 would establish absentee voting and change the voting date requirement for suburban community road projects. Both of these bills were reported out of committee and sent to the House on April 9th. The House is scheduled tentatively to hear these bills on April 24th, and Mr. Godwin and Ms. Deptula and I went up and spoke at the committee meeting. Land use plan update, public hearing on next Tuesday, April 22nd at 6 p.m. at the Georgetown Cheer Center. The Sussex County Council will hold a public hearing for the county's land use plan update. Public comment and input will be received at this public hearing. The P&Z Commission previously held their public hearing on April 3rd. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Baker? Being none, Susan?
Thank you. I have an ordinance for introduction today. This ordinance is to authorize the issuance of up to $2.8 million of general obligation bonds of Sussex County to finance the design, construction, and equipping of the Route 54 Fenwick Island pump station upgrades, consisting of a pump station rebuild, two new pumps, new pump station building, and major upgrades to the force main and other capital improvements. The bonds are backed by the county's full faith and credit, and is expected that the debt service on these bonds will be paid from the revenues of the Fenwick Island Sewer District. It's anticipated that the bonds will be sold to USDA. Their terms are 4.5% or their lesser rate at closing for 40 years. This bond issuance is within the legal debt limits of the county. And this project is being funded 100% by USDA loan bond for $2.8 million.
Just for introduction.
Any questions?
I'd like to introduce that.
Okay, dope. Anything else, Susan? Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I have a couple of items this morning. The first one is mostly informational. A lot of information for you, but I'm also looking for information from you in the form of support for a management initiative at the airport. As you know, you are the owners of a federally funded public use airport. And along with that airport, which, by the way, includes the industrial park. So everything I'm saying this morning includes the industrial park. Along with that airport comes a mountain of regulations and rules from the federal government on how to manage the airport financially and operationally. And it starts with things like federal legislation and the U.S. code. It kind of spreads out into things like executive orders and FAA orders. One of the FAA orders being the airport's compliance handbook, which is written for the FAA internally, and that's how they ensure that we're complying with all those, that mountain of rules. But, you know, since that's what we're judged by, that kind of becomes our rules to follow to keep us out of trouble. And within that, you know, there's a lot of information that kind of lets us know what the FAA is thinking and expects from us. You know, it talks about your primary obligation being to operate the airport for the use and benefit of the public. It also says they don't expect that to be free. You know, they expect us to recover reasonable costs for operating and maintaining the airport. And there are federal regulations, the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 14, mostly Parts 13 and 16, which are the enforcement and investigation parts of the FARs. There's also FAA policies, which come out in the Federal Register, that kind of explain what all those other things mean that we have to abide by. Things like whenever we revise, rewrite, renegotiate an agreement, you know, we're obligated to make reasonable efforts to make the airport as self-sustaining as possible. And you're going to hear that self-sustaining thing a few times today because that's a key thing with the FAA. And you're going to have that opportunity probably five or six times in the next few months as we go through some lease agreements and operating agreements at the airport. In fact, one of those is this morning. You know, and in that policy, it provides for penalties for not doing that. The other thing that document that we deal with quite a bit is our master agreement with the FAA for accepting grant money. And I sent you all a copy two or three weeks ago. I don't expect you to read every word of it. I just want to make sure you're aware that, you know, that this is our agreement. These are the strings that come attached to the money that we get. And like I said, this is our contract with the federal government for those millions of dollars that we've been receiving and plan to receive. And the FAA takes it very seriously. Like the way they explained to me a couple weeks ago was, this is your contract with the federal government, and we take it very seriously. So that was no doubt where we stand on that matter. It's a 27-page document. 5.5 pages of it are just listings of other documents that we have to comply with. And in addition to those, there's 39 what they call grant assurances. A lot of people refer to this document as our grant assurances. And I'll go through each one, but there are some key ones that I keep hearing over and over again. One is we promise to make the airport available to the public on reasonable conditions without unjust discrimination. And the discrimination they're talking about here, mostly, it's not just civil rights type things, but it's economic discrimination. You know, we can't impose economic conditions or financial conditions on one person at the airport that's different from the conditions we impose on somebody else who's doing basically the same thing. Some of the other ones, we have to protect the airspace around the airport for visual and instrument approaches. We have to maintain a schedule of fees and charges that makes the airport as self-sustaining as possible. Again, that keeps coming up. There's an assurance on the use of revenue. Any revenue we generate at the airport can only be spent at the airport for operating and maintaining the airport. There's a land acquisition assurance. Any land that we buy for airport development has to be bought in accordance with the Uniform Relocation Act. So like I said, it's a big document. It's an important one. It's one that I have to deal with all the time out there. And then the state weighs in with the Delaware Code, and that's mostly things we're authorized to do, not so much things we have to do. You know, this gives us authority to make rules and regulations, lease property, establish penalties, et cetera. So how do we deal with this mountain of paperwork, and how do we manage the airport to make sure that we're basically staying out of trouble? And there are different ways to manage. You know, one is just kind of make things up as you go along. That's probably not the best way to manage anything. Another way to be to manage by lease, you know, where we operate basically under the terms and conditions of our latest lease agreement, and there are problems with doing that as well. Probably the industry standard way of dealing with all this is through a set of policy documents called primary guiding documents. And that's the colorful handout that I gave you left at your desk there. This way of doing it, it's endorsed by the American Association of Airport Executives and also the FAA. The FAA publishes a lot of guidance on how to write these documents, what goes in them, and so on. And basically what it comes down to, and I've talked about this before, is a set of expectations. For people that we deal with at the airport, I think it's important that they know what we expect of them at the airport and what they can expect from us. All these documents are interrelated, but they're independent of each other. And they're not just putting our name on somebody else's rules. These are how we would implement all the federal legislation, federal regulations, et cetera, the FAA policies. What I'd like to do is just go through each one real quick and just address what would be in each document and the problems that hopefully would solve for us. The first one is a general provisions document. This would have the elements that are common to all the other documents. Things like where do we get our authority to write these things? What's the role of the airport manager? What's the role of the county engineer in developing the airport? How do we handle conflicts between our rules and other regulatory measures? And how do we vary from these once we write them? You know, if it makes sense to do something a little bit different, how do we kind of vary from these things? The second one would be a lease rates and charges policy, and this would set forth our policies for leasing land and improvements at the airport. You know, things like the length of terms of leases. Most airports will link the length of a term of a lease to the amount of capital improvement that the tenant's putting into the property. Just reading backwards from some of the FAA policies, for a tenant that's not putting any capital improvements in, probably 5 years is the most you'd want to give that tenant. And this addresses our self-sustaining assurance. We'd have policies on subleasing. I know we've had discussions of that in the past. And this document is one of those, or at least the questions that this answers, is before we can actively market some of the properties we have out there. One of the things that's kind of holding us back right now is not really having a good handle on all those policies. For somebody that wants to occupy the airport, a lease use or operating agreement is necessary, and we would have to develop kind of a standard set of those documents. They're not really policies. They're more, the legal implementation of all those other things. For somebody who wants to engage in commercial activity at the airport, which you as the owner of the airport are responsible for, whether you're providing those services or a commercial activity is, a set of minimum standards, which we have this document already. It just needs to be updated. It's not a very useful document right now. But like I said, you're responsible for the quality and level of service that's provided at the airport, no matter who it's provided by. So really need to set things like floor space for different types of activity, types of employees, hours of operation, very specific things, amounts of insurance required. And this is another document and set of issues that needs to be addressed before we can start actively marketing some of the property up there, like the two corporate hangar lots. Probably the most common set of policies at any airport is their rules and regulations, which right now we don't have a set of rules and regulations. This addresses our responsibility for the safe and efficient use of the airport. We do have a few rules that we wrote about the T-hangers a few months ago. And before we did that, I used to tell people we have more rules on how to check out a library book in the county than how to operate at the airport. This would have things like motor vehicle rules, speed limits, parking type things. Who can drive on the airport, on the airfield part of the airport? Do we want them to have lights, radios, what requirements we can put there? Basic aircraft rules. We can't deny somebody the ability to maintain their aircraft, but we can put conditions on it. We obviously don't want somebody to have their airplane on jacks in front of the terminal building changing an engine. So we need to address those issues. What about disabled aircraft? We have some issues with those at the airport right now. Things like basic fire and safety rules. Do we allow people with loaded weapons at the airport? We don't have anything written right now. fuel spills. Denrec has some reporting requirements to them, but we have no reporting requirements to us. You know, we need to put something like that in there. How do we handle special events? You know, Wings and Wheels is probably our biggest event out there right now, and we're going through the process right now trying to figure out what the policies are. You know, if we had a set already written, make things run a lot smoother. And then what kind of penalties would we assess for violations of the rules? The last document would be a set of development guidelines. You know, for somebody that wants to develop part of the airport, you know, what's the approval process? What approvals are necessary? You know, and any construction at the airport, you have to notify the FAA. You know, and they do all their reviews, and we can't do any construction without their approval. And like I said, that also includes the industrial park. There's environmental assessments that have to be done for any construction.
Is that the federal? Is that federal?
Yes.
I thought we were working on a big plan, you know, the big whoopee woo plan that was, you know, all that crap's supposed to be done and, you know, and out of the way, so if anybody comes in, it's all taken care of.
Well, I think you're talking about our stormwater management plan.
I thought we did that. We were doing both of those. But.
No, this is individually with any new construction.
Okay.
This is all under.
I thought over the master plan that was part of the deal, that was one of the reasons we were waiting and everything like that, that this was all done, and then whoever came in, it was kind of scot-free.
If it's.
Need more specific guidelines for like a particular tenant or something? Is that what we do have the master plan. It kind of shows
we have
the
a master plan
for the whole airport.
Right. And part of that is our airport layout plan, which gets approved by the FAA.
Right.
And that shows where we plan development.
Right.
And then with each project, before you actually do it, you have to do an environmental assessment of some sort. Right now we're in the middle of the one that'll cover the runway extension, a new ramp.
Right. Okay. I assumed that the entire airport was being done under the whole thing. So if we have an industrial park, somebody doesn't have to jump through the hoops. We've already done that.
Well, a lot of these are very simple. You know, it's a 3-page form. Yes.
Anytime you get SHPO involved, it's not simple. Is the SHPO part of the deal? Or is it just
fit? It depends on where the development takes place. I mean, mostly the industrial park is already covered.
Okay.
You know, we've gone through that process.
Okay. So that part's done. Okay.
Right. Most of the building that we've done has fallen under a categorical exclusion, which is just a short form, but it still needs to be filed.
Right.
And you can't start construction until we get word back from the FAA that they've approved the categorical exclusion. There's issues with utilities at the airport. You know, the fire marshal approval, conservation district.
Right.
You know, we just went through this in the industrial park recently. You know, after I got through explaining all the things we had to do, I think the tenant thought I was picking on them, and you know, it would have been nice to have a document that I could give them and say, you know, if you want to build a building, here's how you do it, and we'll be glad to help you along with it. DEDO, that you know, Delvar Economic Development Office, has been working with us to attract a light sport aircraft manufacturer to the airport. You know, this is 60 to 100 jobs. I don't think we're very competitive for it, but we do have the basics of what they're looking for. You know, what we don't have is a set of policies that I can hand to them and say, this is what you can expect as a term of your lease. This is how we're going to figure your rent. You want to build your building, this is the process you have to go through, et cetera. So I think that makes us even less competitive because we don't have those types of things to give them. And then the last document, we're going to take all the definitions out of all these documents, put in one definitions document, and that's more of an administrative thing.
Your goal was to develop this, Jim, and come back to the council with...
Right, and that's... My next point is, what does this all mean? My recommendation is that we use this primary guiding documents approach to dealing with that mountain of paperwork or mountain of regulations. You know, and that what I'm looking for is support from you to keep moving in that direction. You know,
I think it's certainly a set of guidelines or something you need, because, but I'm not much on rules anyway. But, I certainly realize you have to
That's
have
fine with your business. Huh? I said it's fine with your business, but wait a minute.
Well, I mean, I understand that, but if you make it so regimented, nobody's going to come anyway.
Right,
I mean,
and that's going to be part of the whole process. And, you don't want to have rules that you're not going to enforce or can't enforce.
Right. I guess that's my thought.
Like I said, these aren't going to be rules that we just rubber stamp from somebody else. This is, our basic policies for how we're going to deal with things that we have to deal with. So even if you don't adopt this approach, you still have to make sure you're not unjustly discriminating, make sure you're just as self-sustaining as possible, that you're responsible for the safe and efficient use of the airport.
Could this be reviewed with the airport committee?
I was getting ready to ask that question. Will that be brought up so the people out there can get a shot?
Right. That's my plan. Yeah. My plan is, and I've got drafts of all the documents except for the minimum standards, which we already had. That's just the very beginning of the process. There are stakeholders in all of these documents, and they're a little bit different for each one. Some of the public input is going to be important, like the rules and regulations, the minimum standards. Minimum standards, the input from the council is going to be important. But, this is your airport. You're going to need to decide what level and quality of service you want at the airport. So throughout the process, you need to be involved. It may not be all five of you all at the same time for the whole thing, but, this will have to be developed with coordination with you. I'd like to put at least the rules and regulations and minimum standards on the website like we did with the comp plan so the public has a chance to make comments. We've been talking about it at the airport meeting for the last couple of times.
When we adopt these rules, the current tenants will have to abide by these rules.
Yes, and I think in most of the leases, that's what it says. Is
okay, good. No, it's good. That's good. No, that's, I think... Okay. Best way to do it.
All right, Jim, I got one more question. Now, while you're setting the guidelines up for the tenants, is there going to be a set of guidelines also to set up for our employees of the county that, I've been out there in the past and seen a county vehicle drive across the runway?
Definitely.
I mean, you're dealing with that?
Yes.
I've had a couple of pilots say that's kind of, you never know if they're, they're supposed to notify somebody by radio and they're working on a light or out there in a truck or cutting grass. And
right.
A lot of times that's not done.
And that's what I was talking about with the motor vehicle rules. Who's allowed to drive on the airfield, what kind of lighting, what kind of radios.
I know we've been stuck in the past kind of with our maintenance personnel going out there and us trying to modernize and be with the feds. That needs to be addressed because the days that we have more traffic than we had years ago, but they're still seem to be approaching it that manner that they just go where they want to go, and it's not the way it should be.
Yes. Right now we have no rules on that.
But you're developing that also, right?
Right. That'll be part of it. We're kind of in the make it up as you go along mode with some of those things.
Okay.
So I guess what I'm looking for is just...
You want the green flag to go ahead with it?
Yes, I do.
Well, I don't think any... do we need an official vote or just an opinion, I guess? I think everybody thinks... I certainly think you need something because it makes it easier on you. Because, you and I have talked on occasions, and we've had discussions about it here and there. And I think if you have a set of rules, at least and we know about them, and you know about them, and everybody has up front. As long as they're not so bad that...
Well, I'm not big on having rules just to have rules.
guidelines, so you flop it down and say, this is what you got to do. Yeah. I think some of the things that we've talked about before, if we want business, we're going to have to do some of our infrastructure work now to be able to get those people here, with the stormwater management, some of those issues that we got dealing out there. I think you can move ahead, Jim. That's fine.
Thank you.
As long as you keep zipping.
The second item that I have, as you remember, I was here February 26th with a request from Georgetown Air Services to assign one of their leases to Sussex Aero Maintenance, which is now owned by Jeff Reed. Mr. Reed was here at that meeting and is also here today. I presented a set of terms that you approved. These terms were provided to everybody prior to the meeting. However, since then, Mr. Reed has come to us, and one of the terms is not what he thought we had all agreed to prior to the meeting. I'm talking to Mr. Griffin, The only way to change that now is to come back and re-vote on this revision. So you should have that in front of you.
Yep.
This is basically the same document that I gave you last time, with the deletions crossed out and the additions underlined.
Right.
The issue is on the length of the term of the lease. The lease was written in 1990 as a 10-year lease with two 10-year renewal options. And what we had approved last time, you had approved last time, was an additional 10-year option, taking out the 20, so basically 22 years from now. Mr. Reed's requested, like, the ability to stay for 30 years under this lease, and that's the addition that I put here. It'd be an 18-year term, which is probably the easiest way of making the changes, taking out the 2038. I also crossed out that second bullet. That really isn't part of the terms, but there's been some confusion about that. In the existing lease, only the tenant has the option to renew, and that was kind of my explanation there, that the council has no authority under the lease to turn down a request to extend the lease with those options. And once the lease runs out, it runs out. There's no, we're not implying that the tenant at the time would be able to stay without the county having anything to say about it. So if 2030 or 2038, this all runs out.
And the problem with the terms that we had originally with the 2030, I guess it was, that was what we were offering,
right?
Or just to 2020?
2030, which would be a third 10-year option on the existing lease.
Okay.
On the existing.
Right, because that seems...
Right, which was written in 1990, but was with Mr. Kenny, is that correct?
I think it was before.
Or whoever before it was, time. Yeah.
Right. So they assigned the lease to the current request, right? And then...
Right. And it's actually two deals. One is an amendment of the lease and then assigning that lease to Sussex Aero Maintenance.
Right.
And there were some other terms that we had amended, but you've already approved that, and that's we're not questioning that today. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, it just seemed it was an awful generous lease to begin with at 2030. I mean, when we reduced the lot size to 39,000, mm-hmm. What was it originally? How much did
it was an acre, so 43.
So we got what? And is the land we got back, is there something we can do with it?
Yeah.
We're taking it back as to provide access into the hangar behind it.
Okay.
Because
so we can get the airplane in the hangar.
So that'll become public apron space.
Okay.
All right. Jim, I got just one other question. I know we talked about the four and the five employees and stuff like that. When it says the definition of skilled, existing business, does that mean the list on, all the businesses that could be there, does that mean that person could be involved, or does that mean strictly for the mechanic part?
Whatever business is there on those dates.
So in other words, if he has the leasing part of the airplane or riding or whatever, some of the I know there's 10 or 11.
Yeah,
if
he opens a flight
school. He could meet any of those divisions in that.
Well, it's so vague, you meet anything. The way it's written, it doesn't really define anything.
There is a list of, I think, 11 different things.
That's an original lease, the first one you approved, Mr. Cole.
The one here says definition of skilled.
Right.
Means it's just mutually agreed.
Of existing business.
Huh?
Of existing business.
Right, but it just mutually agreed between parties. There's no really definition of any what skilled means. It just, as long as two people agree that it's skilled, right?
Is that the way I read it? The county and the business. The intent there is, he hires somebody to sweep the floors.
Well, he might be skilled.
Obviously, we're not going to agree that that's a skill, but that's not a skill associated with a flight school or a
skilled within its own mission.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems such a vague definition.
Okay.
And I don't have the legal documents.
We still own the building, right?
Yes.
And we have to keep the upkeep of it.
Yes.
And I guess as we reflect back on these rents, those kind of rents will
will take care of that building in that many years. It won't need much more. We'll come out losing money at the end of this? Probably. Probably. Right. It just seems.
A guess.
But we do need a maintenance facility at the airport.
Pardon me?
We do need a maintenance facility at the airport, I think, for general aviation purposes. And
I know. I'm not disputing it. It just seems.
It does increase, what, 3% or something like that? I know the original lease, it was.
It's never market value, but
right.
Which is what it should be. But
I mean, if it's $6,000 or say $7,000 a year annual income, and you need a new roof, it might take us 10, 15 years to recoup the money to just put the roof on.
And we have plans for a new furnace and a new door over the next couple of years.
Right. So we're going to be subsidized. This will be subsidized by the county tax base.
Just like the sewer.
Huh?
Just like the sewer.
It's like the sewer?
Yeah. We subsidize the sewer systems in the county. We subsidize them.
Most of the I think the users pay for it.
I don't think so.
Who pays for the sewer service, Mr.
Who pays for the front footing, Mr. Baker? Do we subsidize it?
We do use realty transfer tax to pay for the 100 front
but
foot
But the county
cap
tax base,
the
realty transfer tax will pay for the if the upkeep of this building out here?
It could.
It could pay for capital expenditures
yeah.
for it.
It,
yes.
it could.
It could
okay.
use it for economic development purposes.
Because
yeah,
the county,
right.
county tax base does not subsidize the sewer service. Transfer tax. That's not the county tax.
Unless the transfer tax goes away, then you're going to make a decision.
Well, you got a lot of these ifs. So I'm just saying
right.
under the current.
But there's a lot
scenario,
of ifs.
You just told me that.
I'm just saying that we do subsidize
okay,
the sewer system.
It just seems that we got.
And if we're going to subsidize that this is a county operation, and if
we're going to subsidize everything, okay. I'm just curious about. Early on, when I first got here, we were doing a lot of subsidizing of this airport, and I was
Don't
hoping
make
to
money
see
airports.
Increases and stuff. Okay.
A lot of service.
We are certainly doing a lot better than we were 10 years ago. Is that correct, Mr. Baker?
Yes, and I think Mr. Hicken, as he explained earlier, our goal is to move forward to try to make the airport as self-sustaining as possible. But
and then that is one of our grant assurances, and we talk about the possibility of losing grant money, repaying grant money.
Of course, no more than they're going to give us lately. They make a whole lot of difference. As a
they've given us a lot in the past, and
right.
you know
the future doesn't look very good.
Take that back.
Right. I understand. So,
yeah, motion.
Yes. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council authorize the assignment of the commercial lease agreement for lot C8 with Georgetown Air Services LLC to Sussex Aero Maintenance Inc. Such assignment to include amendment of the lease under the revised terms. Presented by Jim Hicken, Director of Sussex County Airport and Industrial Park, on April 15, 2008.
Yeah, can this be assigned?
Under the existing lease, yes.
Motion, Jim.
So moved. Second.
Moved second. Do we approve the amendment to the lease? Mr. Cole.
I'll abstain. I got to make
it. Do what?
I'm not voting. I'm just abstaining on it.
That's cool. That way you can't be pointing finger at
me. Yeah, I know.
Mr. Phillips.
Based on the recommendation of the director, I vote yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rodman?
Yes.
My vote yes. Awesome. Thanks, Jim. Bob? Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, everybody. This morning, I'm appearing before council for change order number 5 to the scruff upgrade number 2 personnel facilities under construction by conventional builders.
Give away another key.
This change order consists of 3 potential changes and results in an increase of $13,413.86 to the contract. With this change order, the project status would change to being $25,300 over the bid amount or 0.2% over what was bid originally.
0.2%?
0.2%, yes, sir.
I think we can squeak by there. Yeah.
Basically, the first 2 PCOs of this is for extra repair work in the old admin building. The remodeling and retrofitting of that old building, which I think somewhere around 5 or 30 years old, was which worried me the most.
Is that the original?
Yeah, the original part.
Right.
We're basically done building the new part. We've
right.
been rehabbing the old section. And what happens, you just find things, and we found some water damage. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, in the reconstruction, we've put a new roof on, which will prevent that in the future. So anyway, we found some, you know, water damage to the metal stud walls and the plaster and things like that, and two of the walls were load-bearing that carried the roof. In this happened, the plaster and some of the studs in five different parts, rooms of the original building. And then we found in other areas, about five other rooms, the walls we were going to remain plaster was so rough that you couldn't put the drywall and glue it. We had to put furring strips on. And a few more other little things like that. So basically, what happened was the demolition portion to get rid of all that and support the roof while you're taking the new walls and putting them up on the load bearing was $5,317.31. And then to install all the new walls, furring strips, and drywall was $6,282.97. The third PCO was, was for relocating the ductwork heater out of the electrical room into the adjacent hallway, which we had to drill through a block wall, remount the heater, put in two new supply and return registers. And the problem why we had to do that was because a duct water heater in the electrical room, it's just no room to get into it for access for repair and maintenance and clearances for the electrical work. So we just moved it out into the hallway. And that was a cost of $1,813.58. So basically, those three come up to the $13,413.86 to the project. Any questions?
Nope. Are you getting close to being done?
Right now, we're on schedule. We're supposed to be done in July, and we're right there.
Right there where you need them.
Might be a little ahead of schedule. I hate to say ahead of schedule.
I understand.
But
I understand.
We're on target.
Well, now you're done the EOC. Now you can just keep it. You got all kinds of, you got all kinds of time to go down there, right?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead. You have a motion, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department and its consultants, Stearns and Wheeler, that change order number 5 for the Sussex County Project 05-07 Scruff Upgrade Number 2 Personnel Facilities be approved, which increases the contract amount by $13,413.86 for a new total of $3,708,675.33.
So moved.
Second, gentlemen?
Second.
So we move to second. We approve upgrade number 2 as stated. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phelps?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Grant request, Susan?
First one today, Laurel Historical Society.
Make a motion to give $4,000 from my community reinvestment account to Carl Storker for painting the cookhouse.
I'd like to give $1,000, please.
Okay. For the cool. Same?
Yes.
From your community improvement?
Yes.
Okay. Total of $5,000, $4,000 from Mr. Dukes and $1,000 from Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
Boys and Girls Club of Western Sussex.
I'd like to give $5,000 of my community reinvestment to Boys and Girls Club of Western Sussex.
I'd like to give $2,500 for my community investment.
Okay. Any other questions? Motion, gentlemen. Second, please.
Second.
Okay. It's moved second that we allow $5,000 from Mr. Dukes, $25,000 from Mr. Phillips. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Yes, motion passed.
March of Dimes.
What did we do last year?
200 each for total 800.
Who was missing?
Mr. Cole was missing for their Walk America. That was in 05. That was the last time we granted money, was 05.
Can I get $200 from each councilman for
second.
The March of Dimes, March for Babies. Do it for the babies.
Am I okay there, Susan? Yeah. Okay. Nope. Okay. I'm out of money, so it's okay. That's cool. So it'll be 800 still? Okay.
I'll kick in 200 for Mr. Jones.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be 1,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Felton. It's
It's moved second. We get a lot of $1,000 from all the councilmen except mine. Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yeah.
Mr. Duke?
Yes.
Rogers, Mr. Rogers not voting.
American Cancer Society.
Eastern side.
This is for the Relay for Life that's held in Millsboro.
That's it.
That's for the eastern side.
Yes.
Is $100 too cheap from three of us? What's the going rate?
$1,000. $200 each is what they've gotten most Relay for Life.
I'll make a motion to give $200 each.
Second.
Did that a minute ago. So do it again.
Somebody has to pick up Mr.
Oh, I got him again.
We'll take care of it.
Okay. I move to give $1,000 to the Eastern Sussex Relay. Mr. Cole?
I didn't want to take care of it.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes.
Mariner Middle School.
What'd they ask for? Can that be a youth activity?
Not a school can.
That's
no.
Cool.
Sir. Their field trip, seventh graders at Cape Henlopen.
$5,000.
Yeah.
What is it, $1,500 they wanted?
Go to the letter. Sorry about that. I don't have the amount. They just sent the application is, which is a huge budget.
$2,500. You're trying to spend my money. Can it be community reinvestment?
I don't know
or
that you want to fund the whole.
Can it be community investment?
Don't you? Are you on
that? Yeah.
Do it out of that, whatever the amount is there.
Whatever, what amount?
I think I can't remember the lady called, but I don't have it written down. Which is it.
You want to postpone it until next week, Mr. Rogers?
They have an application on here, but I mean, they're saying it's $7,200.
No.
You're right.
That sounds about right.
Save the amount.
I'll move to give $1,000 for Mr. Rogers.
I'll tell you what, I'll make a motion to allow me to go up to $2,000, and if it's not that much, it'll be back with Till, but I got approval to do it, correct?
$2,000. Second.
Okay. Moved second is a lot, $2,000. Mr. Rogers? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Yes. Motion passed.
That's it for today.
That's right.
Zonings? Any ordinances?
We don't have any ordinances.
That's a good thing.
I got a question for
okay.
You. We all get these quarterlies, Jim, the legal quarterly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just sitting here looking at it, and there's a couple court cases here that, and they've been appealed to the Supreme Court, but the one on the front page talked about when the county changes its plan. You know, in the past year, when we have applications and the rules are such, and then we change the rules, we allow that application to continue on under the old rules. And there was a court case saying that it was affirmed by the Chancery Court that that's not necessarily we don't have to. We can make them come up to the new rules.
That's true.
Right?
You can.
Okay. Okay, so I mean, we need to know that, I think, sometimes when some of these things happen, because...
Oh, I think we've always known that, because...
Well, I don't know. We always say that, oh, that was in under the old rules, we got to let it go.
That's a question of you're exercising your discretion to do that. If you didn't put that clause in there, it would become effective when
it's adopted. So as we speak now, when we get this new land use plan, and we've had old applications filed, and we may get into a situation of this... The new rules apply, even though they've already filed the applications.
Well, the new rules will come forth in the 20 or so implementing ordinances that you decide to adopt to implement the plan. When you adopt those ordinances, they're effective the day you adopt them, unless you put a delayed implementation date, or unless you put an exception that it will only apply to new applications.
Which we often do in a sense of fairness.
Well, it's okay, and then
But you're right that you don't have to do that.
That's okay. I always understood that it was some kind of precedent, legal precedent that we had to or something. I'm sorry. Okay, and then the
state and resource map.
Then there was another one here. It's let's see if this one is where we have had our planning and zoning department deny some of these subdivisions outside the growth district.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we've come back here for appeals.
Right.
The Superior Court and the Court of Chancery had some decisions. Now it looks like it's going, this same thing's going to the Supreme Court, Delaware Supreme Court. But basically it said that you can deny applications even though the application meets all your requirements, because we have the discretion to do that. So the court upheld Kent County's ability to deny an application because it had testimony given to them that it was outside a growth district from, like, say, the planning committee, and then DelDOT didn't like it because they didn't have any, you know, it was level four and all these other things. So they had agencies saying they didn't like it, school districts, et cetera, and so they denied it, and the court upheld that, even though the applicant met all the requirements. So we have the ability. So we've been getting all these appeals. The Planning Zoning Commission has the ability to say no.
Well, that's the Ashburn case, I believe.
I'll tell you, this will be a test. You're right.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, it's the Ashburn case. Right.
That has been appealed to the state Supreme Court.
Right.
That decision departs from the standard that is the bright line that's been drawn by the courts previously. So we may want to wait and see what the outcome of that is on appeal.
China.
How long would appeal like something like this take? Do we know? Could it languish out there for years?
Probably another 6 months.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's in the works. Okay. Okay. But, yeah, I thought, so once the Chancery Court and the Superior Court make decisions, if it's not appealed, we go with those decisions.
Right.
That becomes the law of the land.
Yes.
Is it, even though they're appealed, it's still the law of the land as we speak, right, though? Even though somebody makes an appeal.
Well, but
if you
decide that you're going to change a policy based on the case that's under appeal, and
you might want to wait.
You might want to wait.
Right, I understand that.
You might be putting yourself out on a limb that gets sawed off.
But to answer the question, if the Chancery Court, like in that one on the Ashburn case.
Yeah, that was Judge Witham's case.
Okay, is it the law of the land as we speak, even though they've appealed it, until it gets changed?
Well, what the people who appealed it were saying was we met all the requirements of the code.
Right.
And what the judge said they could do is go outside the code and look at comments like from the State Planning Coordinating Committee, plus comments.
Very boring.
That's what Superior Court and...
Anecdotal evidence.
Right.
That sort of thing.
That's what the Superior Court and has said.
That one decision said.
Right. But now they've appealed that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But what my question is, at this stage, what kind of legal precedence does it have? Since those two courts,
if you're going to rely on that, it would involve your predicting that case will be upheld. But as I say, the last word is...
It's not out in limbo. I mean, it does have some status that...
Until it's overturned, it's a ruling of Superior Court.
Right now. Right. Okay. That's, yeah.
It does go further than the previous cases.
Okay. All right.
You're next.
Okay. Any other
trying
questions?
To get some clarification.
Only early lunch.
Moving on.
Additional business?
Is not? Oh. Please walk faster. We have early lunch.
My name is Daniel Kramer. What do you want to know?
Nothing.
We got lunch or what?
I'll put it this way. I want to know how dumb people can truly get. They call Councilman Dukes about a problem that belongs to the state, and the state's got a smoke and mirrors games going on, claiming they're cutting the budget. Look at the real thing. It ain't being cut.
We're subsidizing it.
Right. We are. He doesn't know we're subsidizing it.
Okay.
Executive session?
We go into executive session.
Right? Lunch.
For
what, this day?
Pay?
Personnel, land acquisition, and pending potential litigation.
And lunch?
The whole nine yards, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything comes up.
It's been moved to second that we go into executive session as stated motion.
Just
all favor signify by saying aye. Gotcha.